It's finally time to begin our recommendations for summer reading, and we start with In the Distance, a book you may have missed when it was published last fall, after first-time author Hernan Diaz answered an open call for manuscripts from the nonprofit Coffee House Press in Minneapolis. Then everyone sat up in April when it was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize and the Penn Faulkner Award for Fiction. It reads at times like a dystopian tale as an immigrant Swede makes his way across this country, sometime between the Gold Rush and the Civil War, a country that feels at times like post-apocalypse America, with crazed gold miners, a murderous cult that masquerades as Native Americans as it rapes and pillages, a wagon train of homesteaders. But then there's also the mysticism. Crossing an empty desert, he's blinded by a light. It's a mirror on the open door of a massive wardrobe, sensuous spirals and scrawls in the bleached wood. How did it get there? In fact, Kirkus Review says, In the Distance is Cormac McCarthy by way of Gabriel Garcia Marquez. And Hernan Diaz joins us from the NPR studios to talk about it. Welcome and congratulations.
Oh, thank you, Robin. Thank you for having me.
Where did this all come from, this idea of an immigrant Swede crossing America?
Part of it has to do with the fact that I grew up in Sweden, so it's not as weird or whimsical as one might suppose.
And you weren't born there?
I was born in Argentina. I left when I was two. I spent my whole childhood and moved back to Argentina, went to college. And then as soon as I could, I left and moved to London. And I've been in New York for the last 20 years.
So you've been a stranger in a strange land several times.
Yes. And that went into the book.
Well, and I'm trying to describe how it's presented. You have your character enter the scene in the most extraordinary way. He crawls out of ice towards an icebreaker outside Alaska?
Outside Alaska, yes. I wanted him to emerge, a birth-like scene, from out of nowhere, almost as if he had been devoured and expelled by the landscape. And you can tell which way is up or down because it's all white, even the sky. And all of a sudden, this naked body emerges out of nothingness.
And don't worry, we find out what he's doing there by the end of the book. But
yes.
But then you take us back to how he even got to this country. He, Håkan, am I saying that right? Håkan?
Håkan.
Håkan, the Swede,
yes.
Has been separated from his adored brother Linus as they left Sweden. He's now stranded in San Francisco, Linus in New York. His Homeric goal, Håkan's, is to find his brother. So he travels cross-country, moving against this tide of settlers going the other way.
That's right.
And he knows nothing. So, you know, Western novels presume that we know what the desert looks like. Through his eyes, we're on the moon.
It's funny that you say that, because throughout the writing process of the book, I thought of planet Mars in early science fiction, a land nobody had been to, but that had very specific rules and a specific fauna and flora and topography. And that was the West I was interested in, a fictional West. And you're totally correct. He has no idea of where he is. He doesn't even know the Earth is round. He doesn't speak a word of English. He has no money.
And he's huge.
He never stops growing, yes.
Why did you do that?
The practical reason was that at one point in the book, he commits a terrible act of violence. And he is destroyed morally by it. And I wanted him to be unable to hide. So making him massive was an obvious response to that. And the second reason was, I don't know why, but I was attracted to the idea of this gigantic body in this gigantic landscape.
Well, that's kind of the mystical part of it, because it does edge toward, you know, the mythical creatures, the King Kongs, Paul Bunyan. Yeah. It's Paul Bunyan, only
Paul Bunyan,
from
Sweden. Yes, of course. Yes, but I was always careful to keep Håkan a normal human being.
Right.
I think at one point it says he was as large as he could possibly be while still remaining human. This is not a magical realist book at all. And you're right about the mystical part, but rather than thinking about magic, I think there is a strong transcendental vein in the book. There's a character who's a naturalist who owes a lot to Emerson and that whole tradition, and that's where I find the more mystical strand of the novel.
Yeah, the naturalist that he travels with has a Hosanna moment where he's sort of realizing, actually, evolution. You know, he's kind of rethinking things under the stars.
He almost gets it.
Almost gets
not
it.
Not quite, yeah.
Well, but staying with Håkan and
yes.
His
great
size, you know, when he comes into town, though, he does, you do have a bit of the traditional Western in that it's when the stranger comes to town, everybody comes out and gawks at him.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. In Hawkins' case, you mentioned he commits this act, saving people from, you know, atrocity, but he still hates every moment of it. I read that you really had a hard time writing that.
Yes, I almost gave up the whole book because I knew that the story I wanted to tell entailed that moment. And when it came to do it, I found that I couldn't. And it's actually very, very, very brief, maybe 4 to 6 sentences. But going back to what you were saying, the hero walking into a dusty road, there are many stereotypical moments like that in the book, and they're very, very intentional. And I wanted to play with those slightly ossified, petrified tropes of the Western and try to turn them into something new.
Our Swede goes from being an outcast who lands on the shores to this unintended outlaw to legend. And he's huge. And I'm wondering at times, you know, could he be a stand-in for America itself?
I did want to, in a way, condense and coalesce different narratives of our country into this story, and in particular into this character who is at the same time an absolute outcast, but also very much the moral center of the book. And it is also a way, because the book is set mostly before the Civil War, and most Westerns are post-Civil War. This is a book about the United States in the throes of becoming itself. Mm. And I was interested in re-examining that period of our history.
He travels and he travels. We realize how hard it was to make your way across America when you had to feed yourself, you had to clothe yourself. His life becomes, for years at a time, simply sustaining his life. In fact, there's a passage, if you would read it for us, which describes some of the travels that we've heard.
He travels on foot for years. He crossed deserts and forded rivers, climbed mountains and traversed plains. He ate fish and prairie dogs, slept on moss and sand, skinned caribou and iguanas. His face became wrinkled by many summers and furrowed by many winters. His hands, burned and frostbitten year after year, were crossed and recrossed with lines and creases. Once he saw the ocean, but turned around immediately, thinking there would be settlements along the coastline. Whenever he stopped, it was in an inhospitable location, never in a meadow, by a water source, or in a plentiful spot, barely pitching camp, and seldom making fires. It was dead quiet in his mind. He rarely thought of anything that was not at hand. Years vanished under a weightless present. Through countless frosts and thaws, he walked in circles wider than nations. And then he stopped.
But we're like him. We don't know, Hernan, how long did he walk?
He walks for, I would say, a few decades.
Oh, man.
Yes.
And to what end? Is it metaphor for something, or did you just want to see what would happen to someone if they tried to cross this country by foot in the 1800s?
It's not a metaphor for one single thing. I was not interested in his arrival. I was more interested in his disorientation, in the experience of being completely and absolutely lost, and experiencing complete and absolute loss, both things.
Of course, it resonates so now because of the, you know, millions of migrants around the world. Were you thinking of that?
I am firsthand familiar with uprootedness and the experience of being an immigrant or even a refugee in Sweden.
And we should say you and your family had to flee Argentina because of your parents' activism. So you know about that dislocation.
Exactly. So that for sure was in my mind at all times. Obviously, I couldn't foresee the current events, but I am glad, if that's the correct word for this horrible situation, that this book can be a sort of commentary or an intervention into what is going on right now.
Again, the book In the Distance. It made me want to travel out west again, even though there's such hardship, but there's such beauty. But do I understand this doesn't come from your love of traveling through that part of the... You have never been to these places.
I've been to very few of them, and I decided very actively not to go to any of these places and rent a car and have sort of an air-conditioned experience of the characters' ordeals. It seemed to me slightly disarming. I'm sure I would have learned a lot from it, but I wanted to stick with literary sources, travel narrative from the 19th century, and something that sometimes is forgotten when people talk about fiction and start going about research. I wanted to rely on imagination, my imagination, to imagine these places from scratch.
Wow. It's just one of the best descriptions of the American West by an Argentinian who grew up in Sweden and had never been there. It's just great. Aaron Diaz's book is In the Distance. It's our pick for a summer read, especially if you're traveling through the country. Hernan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin. It's been a pleasure.